Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, it's Kim Gould. This is Cosmic Surfing Radio. And today I have a special guest, Nyana Stevenson, who's in Nashville, where it is 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm here in Nimbin. Nimbin's a bit of a famous town, actually. Have you ever heard of Nimbin, Nyana? Nyana?
No, I haven't.
It's May, isn't it? May Anna.
Yes.
I listened to your interview with Rita where she was struggling to get the pronunciation right. So I've been training myself. It's a little town anyway in northern New South Wales. We've had all these bushfires, of course, and then now we're having flooding all over the place, but not where the bushfires are still burning out of control and people are still living in fear of losing their homes. So, I mean, America's like that too, isn't it? It has those crazy sort of distinctions in weather where...
Wherever it needs the rain, it's not the place that's getting it, and you know, the places that don't need it just get dumped on. So,
And people contact you and say, are you okay? And you go, yeah, the floods are 800 kilometres away. I'm fine. People in England, oh, my goodness, it's flooding in Australia. I hope my friend's okay.
Australia's a big place.
I could probably find a high spot. Don't worry.
Well, we know you've got one.
We have got just a couple. They're not that high, really. our soil here is the most ancient in the world because it's so low down in the Earth's crust, I've heard.
Okay.
Which I'm sure is significant in some really amazing and magical ways. Now, Nyana, let's talk about you. You've written a book called The Sage Age, and it's bringing together the intuitive and the scientific aspects. And you actually grew up having your mother holding one side of that and your father holding the other. So in a sense, you were really just plopped down in exactly the right place and the right time to be a bridge for these two things, do you think?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, from day one, I just lived immersed in that blending of scientific engineering. My dad was actually had a very analytical engineering mind. And my mother and her... You know, on both sides of my family, all the women in the family were intuitives. So I just thought that's what it was to be a woman. If you're a woman, you're also an intuitive. And so, I didn't know until I got almost into junior high that that's not true for everybody. so that was a shock. But, my mother is the single most creative person I've ever known, ever. Because she is simply not bound by the laws of physics and how things have to work. So she would come up with all these really incredible creative ideas, and my dad would have to figure out how to make them work. And so I got both sides of that and seeing that happen and learning to live both ways, think both ways, and always had both available to me to do anything that I wanted to do. So I got to practice both ways as well growing up. So I'm sure that had everything in the world to do with a book like that coming out of me.
Yeah, that's just astonishing. You know, I think... one of the most amazing things for me about that is that you grew up with this incredibly, it sounds like, incredibly workable partnership, something that was actually very positive and very creative in this amazing way, that this was your model of how the masculine and the feminine energy came together.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, in a cooperation. For people who were so incredibly different to be able to cooperate and actually accomplish things, you know, besides just the relationship to build things. And so that was really amazing. I was just really in shock when I found out the rest of the world didn't always operate that tolerability together and that people weren't encouraged to do whatever it was that came to them, however they were, whatever they found interesting. I never heard the word can't as far as my imagination and what I wanted to do and what I wanted to seek out to do. I never heard that word. I was encouraged to pursue whatever it was that my heart desired in that manner and that I could do it. So, I guess it was a very unusual upbringing for the time. That's sad to say that it's unusual.
Yeah, well, for sure. Although, obviously, we've all got our role to play, and a lot of what I do is breaking down old paradigms, which I'm a bit over now.
Yeah.
I'd just like to come onto your side of the fence, which is much more creative, I think. I'm a bit over. It's been a lot of fun for me, you know, breaking down old paradigms. It's been a very powerful process and a very creative process and a lot of fun, really a lot of fun. But I'm certainly at the point where, I'm like, yeah, thanks, done that.
Broken down
everything that I, you know, feel was restricting me in any way whatsoever, and now I'd just like to do a bit of creating in the other way, on the other side of the spectrum. Tell us then, going from that background, did you have a clear sense of what you wanted to do, or was that something that developed over time?
Oh no, absolutely. I think I came out of the womb playing music. My dad's whole family were professional musicians. They played behind people like Elvis, Charlie Rich, folks like that. Everybody in the band wanted me to play something, so I got to sit in everybody's lap and learn all the different instruments. So I became a multi-instrumentalist very, very early, and I was hooked. I was just totally hooked. I became a composer before I was a teenager, and that's what I wanted to do with my life. And when I first went to college, I went to two colleges at the same time, and I was majoring in music and minoring in acoustics. And then I woke up and decided, oh, my gosh, I have to get a job with this liberal arts degree. And, you know, I went early to that. And that was a real revelation. Oh, yeah, I have to get a job. And there was just nothing out there that I was really all that particularly interested in that I could get with that particular degree. And so I started working at a music studio and got into sound engineering and loved it. Just thought that was the best fun. But the equipment started breaking down, and it was extraordinarily expensive to have somebody come in. So I changed my major to electronics, went to a different school, got my degree in electronics, started working that, and never looked back. So, yes, I had a very clear sense of what I wanted to do, but is that what I ended up doing for a career? No. I still got music in my life. I have a recording studio in my house. It's very small. Now that you can go digital these days, you know, make the recording studio very small.
Yeah, sure.
And I've got music playing in 11 countries and have had for years, jingles, documentaries, that kind of thing. Played on stage for a lot. So I still did it. I just didn't necessarily do it for my livelihood. Every other kind of creativity, writing and carving and, you know, different other things, I just don't depend on them for my livelihood at that point. Until I wrote Stage Agent, it's like, yeah, I can see writing being another career. I can see that. So I'm really happy for everything that being in the electronics field has taught me, because it's allowed me to do web designs, you know, do all the techie stuff that I need to do and work with electronic music. So I understand both sides of that, and I can create things that create sound, which is very fun. Of course, I play bunches of acoustic instruments too, so it's not just all, you know, on keyboards or anything. And have an appreciation for sound, just purely sound instead of just music. But I am classically trained in music too, so I have a full understanding of that. And it all plays in together, you know, it all plays in together. So,
well, this is the thing, isn't it? Because a lot of what I'll get you to just explain to us what your book's about in a minute, but it seems to me, I mean, the whole thing with electronics and sound waves and the effect that sound waves have on us and all of that sort of thing, I mean, that obviously is really crucial to what you've written in the Sage Age.
Oh, yeah, being able to literally have lived in country. Listen to it is to have lived in country. Not only have I experienced it for myself, but I've gotten to know these cultures from the inside. So I understand where people are coming from. I understand the language. And so to be able to be that bridge, it fully prepared me to be that bridge and have an understanding that I don't think many other people can have unless they have lived in country with that and understand the cultures. Because you don't see anything from the outside as you do from the inside. And to be able to talk to both and translate for the people who want to meet with each other. And that's what the Sage Age is really about. There's so much misinformation.
Tell us,
and
Tell us a bit about what The Sage Age is about now, the book.
Well, it's blending science with intuitive wisdom in that there's a lot of misinformation out there and there's a lot of misunderstandings, and it's really clearing all that up, plus giving perspective. There's history in the book as well, to give a holistic perspective. And say like the word dimension. In the intuitive arts, that word means a realm of existence. But in the rational sciences, it means a plane of measure like length or height. So when you talk about something like string theory, that you have to concede a minimum of 10 dimensions, then the intuitives start jumping up and down and say, see, we told you there's all these realms of existence. It's like that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about length and height and, you know, 10 different ways of describing something through measurement. So that's part of the misunderstanding, so that we're using the same words, but we're in the context, they're very, very different. So to clear up a lot of that kind of misunderstanding, plus the history, because we didn't come to this, to where we are now, just out of a vacuum. And I think the 4.5 years it took to research the book, the thing that really, really, it was the gift to myself was being able to see the evolution of human thought and to see these things put together holistically outside of a time frame. Because, you know, some folks are millennium ahead of the masses. They're way, way ahead of what the masses are thinking about, and the visionaries are way ahead of most folks. So you kind of have to take it out of the context of time, because it doesn't flow linearly like that. And only when you get a holistic view of it can you truly see the evolution of human thought and how we've come to what we've come to and why we think the way we think.
That particularly interests me, because I think a lot of people that I come in connection with, and I'm sure it's the same for you, are actually or feel themselves to be and have felt themselves all their life to be quite alien in some ways, that they have never fitted in with other
people. Yeah, you put me in that group. To some degree, I mean, because I've just always gone to my own drumbeat, regardless of what was going on around me. It's like I came in with a plan, just from the get-go. And my nanny even told my mother that when I was first. She said, you will not raise this one. She's got her own idea. So, Mom, that was true, you know. And I've just always had my own ideas about things. Not that I'm not cooperative, not that I don't try to fit in. I'm not trying to be a rebel. I'm not actually trying to be different in any way. It's just I need to go with what makes sense to me, and that seems to make sense to other people. It's just in arrears. You know? I mean, 2 or 3 years later, they're like, oh, yeah, that's what you were talking about. It's like, yeah. You know, so I just keep going. Just keep going.
Yeah, sure. And I just think that experience is, just the way you explain it, is a really great inspiration for people who do feel this sense that they have this understanding that other people just aren't getting it. One of my favorite astrologers, Philip Sedgwick, was saying just recently, people are going to start seeing you. You know, you've come out of the box and you've developed this whole new thing and people are going to start seeing you, but one word of warning: don't stray too far from the box, because won't recognize you. And thought, that's really interesting to me, because I sent an email back to Philip and said, now, if only I could remember where I left that damn box. Because I can't even remember what that box looks like.
Yeah, no doubt. And really, because it's just one step for you to, you know, as you make your journey out into left field. And after a while, you're so far out there, and it's only been one step at a time, so it's been so gradual, it doesn't really seem like that great a distance. But when you turn around and see the crowd is way back, you know, that way, it's like, oh, I really have come way out here, haven't I? And it just doesn't seem like the person making the journey.
And what I see now is a lot of this material is actually that we've, not so much you perhaps, because I think that supportive environment that you had has probably given you a different experience to a lot of people, which is that they've had to hide it away. They've had to hide this part of themselves away, and that's starting to come out now. And in fact, you're one of the people that grounds that with your, I was saying, with your earth in gate 61. That's in the crown chakra, and that's about bringing the invisible information and inspiration out into the open so that everyone can see it. So you're actually a grounding rod for that sort of process
My early childhood, I think, really helped with that a lot for me to say, whatever it is that you're saying is supposed to be normal, well, you know, this is my normal. And I just never bought into what anybody else said about it. Not that I really had a whole lot of people come at me in any kind of way, because one of the things that I tell folks is the more okay you are with you, the more okay everybody else will get with you. Just own it and go on. And so that has a lot to do with it, being able to ground that stuff, because it is my reality, and I never accepted anything else as being my reality except what's real to me. So it's like, I'm sorry that's not real for you yet, but it will be coming.
It will be. In fact, it already is. You just can't see it.
yeah. And so it's that invisible thing. It may be invisible to other people, but I'm living it. You know, I'm actually living it. It's not just in my head. I'm actually experiencing it. I'm actually living it, and this is very real for me. So to be able to accept that as my reality, whether anybody else is having that experience yet or not. And, of course, fortunately, it's been good now that we have the Internet. I have a chance to sit in Nashville and talk to someone in Australia that is like-minded to say, oh, yeah, it's not invisible for me either. It's my reality, too. And it's like, oh, thank goodness. So, you know, that's been really wonderful over the past 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, your website is called thesageage.net. Yes. And you can go on there and have
Wait a second. Just sageage.net.
I beg your pardon. Sageage.net. And Mayanna's got some articles on there. You can also have a look. She's got her book. It's available on the site there, or there's a link at least, isn't there, to get the book?
Oh, yeah, several.
Yep, okay. But what I want you to do now...
There's some great resources for that. I was really tickled that it was listed on Better World Books. I'm really proud of that because it's got three bottom lines. I mean, they use the money to combat illiteracy in the world. They're a very green company, too. So, you know, there's a lot of places you can buy it, but places like that are listed on there, too, that I'm really happy to participate in that.
Great. Now tell us about the main, as I understand it, because I haven't had time to get a copy of it, but the main thing that it seems to me that your book is about is talking about the body's crystal matrix, or?
No, well, that's in one chapter. There's about three chapters on the body, the physical body, as a multifaceted antenna system. There's a few chapters on history. And then there's a few chapters on science, like physics and quantum physics. And then there's a chapter on medicine, intuitive arts. There's a chapter on the subtle energy body. So you have to remember that this is for both scientists and intuitives. So on some of that, it's just surface-level education, basically.
Yeah.
Really, the whole book is a four-year education condensed down into, like, one inch. So the crystals in the body are part of that antenna system for the whole body.
Is that something that's got the most attention, that particular aspect?
Among intuitives, it has. What I've heard from the science folks, actually, I haven't talked to many physicists about this yet, but what I've been hearing from allopathic, educated medicine folk is that, you know, the standard Western model of it. They were like, why didn't I hear about this in school, about these crystals in the body? And I said, I don't know. It's not like it's not known science. This is not pseudoscience. This is not woo-woo stuff. This is stuff that's well-known. It's so well-known. It's what an MRI is based on. A lot of our non-invasive imaging technology is based on the crystals in the body and the magnetic properties of those things. So it's not like this isn't part of mainstream science. It's not on the fringes. And why they're not teaching this to doctors and researchers, I have no idea. They should be, because our imaging technology depends on it. And the more we know about that, the more closer we're going to come to vibrational medicine.
Now that really interests me for two reasons. So before I go on and ask you about something about that, just tell us a little bit about the body's crystal matrix, so we're all here together on the same page.
Okay, the two crystals that I cover in the book are piezo crystals, and these are the same things that are in phonograph needles and electric guitar pickups, the little pickups behind the strings on electric guitar. These are piezo crystals, and they're located in things like your teeth, your bones, collagen, array, you know, the soft tissue areas like ligaments, tendons, that kind of thing. They're also in your intestines. And so what they do is convert mechanical energy into electrical energy. So that's why weight-bearing exercises work. When you're walking and your foot strikes the ground, it sends a shockwave through your bone, and it compresses the bone. Well, those piezo crystals in the bone get compressed, and when they do, they send out an electrical signal to say, I'm being compressed. They send that to the brain and say, send more strengthening agents here because this bone is being stressed and it needs to be built up. That's how you strengthen your bones through weight-bearing exercise. It's by the electrical signals that the piezo crystals are sending out. So the other, and in your gut, same thing. They work in reverse. When they get an electrical signal, they deform their shape mechanically. So that's how things move through your intestines in an orderly fashion. It's pushing these things through. They're timed out to push things through that way. The electrical signals are changing into mechanical, which change shape and push things
and
through your body.
And that's how peristalsis happens.
Right. The other crystals that I talk about are liquid crystals. Now, these aren't quite exactly like the ones in your TV for a liquid crystal display, but they're close. They're close to that. They're a lot closer to like the dew that's at the bottom of your soap dish. Those are liquid crystals as well. And the ones that are in your body are a little more formed like those than they are the kind that's in your TV. But the same principles apply for how they work. And there's a lot of interest and how these work for our imaging technology. There's a whole lot of interest in those. That's where the research is going on about those. And, you know, I would love it if it would come back over to biology, if they would research it a little more, because we're going to be able to get into vibrational medicine really fast when they figure out what's going on with those.
You were talking about when, and I think it relates specifically to the liquid crystals rather than the ones you were talking about with the bones and things, but the liquid crystals that are like the soap scum, is that they can actually form into a coherent state?
Yes.
Does that make any sense scientifically?
Well, yeah, but I mean, the way they work is a matrix. All these things are working together, and the things that are going on with the liquid crystals are just a little different from what's going on with the piezo crystal. So what we're looking at is communication at a distance in your body, because there's something going on that nobody has figured out quite yet. They can see it happening, but they haven't quite figured out what it is. And this is one of the biggest mysteries that we're facing now that will change everything. And we're right on the verge of changing everything in biology. Everything we think about chemical interactions in the body, a lot of that's about to go away and be replaced by an entirely new paradigm. And, I mean, we're right on the verge of this. And this is coming from science, not from the intuitive arts, but from, you know, direct on science. And what happens is in your cells, they change shape. They have a conformational shape change that's going on in your cell. And nobody can figure out why that's happening. It happens before there's any electrical communication. It happens before there's any chemical interaction with nutrients entering the cell or toxins leaving, and they can't.
So they
figure
can't
out
find
what
the trigger,
right? And the other thing is, they've been doing this in like you know, petri dishes, where they bring a toxin near the cell and it reacts as if it has absorbed it. It knows that it's nearby. This doesn't work in glass petri dishes, because glass blocks UV light. It only works in quartz dishes, because quartz will pass UV light. So there's something going on. We have biophotons in our body that literally cells emit light. And I'm about to put an article up about that, as a matter of fact, because the guy who came up with this back in the 70s and 80s, they use these because they come off the cells of plants, too, and it's a great way to check the quality of our food. It lets us check. We have rhythms of these things in the emissions that we put out in our cells. They run in 7, 14, 21-day cycles and on up. And cancer patients lack those rhythms with that light emission. Things that are emitting too much light are actually ill. The things that are emitting too little are ill in a different kind of way. If you have too much coherence, it's a bad thing. So you have to have this dynamic balance going on in your body or in a plant for it to be healthy. And the lower the light emissions that are coming out of that, the healthier the thing is. So, you know, it's just putting all of these different things together. And one of the problems with science is they have very specialized fields. So one hand doesn't know what the other is doing. And that's part of what the book is about, the Sage Age, is to give that holistic idea, even for scientists, to be able to see what somebody else is doing, what they're researching, and find out, well, how can I plug in what I'm doing with what they're doing and combine it into a greater understanding?
Yeah.
And what else the book shows is that a lot of intuitive practices are actually researching, the people who work with the noetic sciences and things are actually researching the same things, they're just using different language, and the scientists would never know it. So it's being able
absolutely.
To give that holistic view and show that some people are actually researching the flip side of the exact same coin, they just don't know it. And once we can get to where we can put all this together, wow, we'll have some real breakthrough understandings.
You know, one of the things, I've got a caller on, and I'll bring you on in a minute. I just want to make a point about one of the things that I've been doing is looking at the chart for 2012 and looking at all the material around that particular day where things are meant to shift. And, of course, my take on it is that we're moving faster and faster towards some quite dramatic change, but it's not going to be something that we're, you know, sitting around having a cup of tea and then boom, it happens. It's like any sort of evolution. But yeah, we're moving faster and faster towards something dramatic that's going to happen around then. But the thing that really jumps out at me from everything I look at is that it's like, and I'm sure in science this is a principle where it's like everything is being attracted together. Everything is coming together. All the different spiritual disciplines are coming together. All of the different ideas, scientific and intuitive, coming together. All of the different levels of our being, emotional, mental, spiritual, physical, are coming together. Our ideas of the way we perceive time and space coming together. So it's like, to me, there's this massive integration in every possible sphere of life and our experience of life coming together. And what you're saying, you know, it's like exactly what you say. It's like when it all comes together, it's going to be like, oh, wow. There's going to be this amazing experience of who knows how it's going to play out.
Well,
it's
really, truly revolutionary. Things, this is what I don't think a lot of people understand, what we're on the verge of. We're on the verge of breakthroughs in biology that are going to be ethics shattering.
Yeah.
It's going to challenge us in ways that we can barely even imagine, much less handle. And so, and it's coming fast. I mean, in the next 20 years.
Tell us what you imagine about.
Well, you know, there are people working on it right now to be able to live to be 300 years old. And if we get through some of the breakthroughs that we're looking at, that could very well happen. Now, think about the stress that's going to put on the Earth with this massive population that sticks around.
Yeah.
So, you know, on our resources and those kinds of things and how we use energy and all these different. So there's all sorts of things that are coming through. Like if you look at, 30 years ago with the first test tube baby and then maybe, 10 years ago or so or 15, the first cloning of a sheep, those were nothing compared to what we're going to be looking at now. And we need to prepare. Now, we need to integrate our knowledge. We need to educate ourselves as much as possible so that we actually have some clarity. And that's what the book is about, clarity, that you actually know what you're talking about. Because there are a whole lot of people who use the word quantum to sell something. And I flat ask them, you know, an intuitive practitioner who's using something, I say, what's quantum about it? And they're like, I don't know. Well, you know, you need to know. You need to know what you're selling. You need to know what you're working with and get some clarity on this stuff so you can really bring it through and really make
use
of the quantum realm.
One of the ways, Mayanna, with your with your design, one of the ways that you bring the invisible to visibility is through naming things, Gate 62. So I think, you know, I know this thing with using these words and finding a common language is a really important part of your process, and I can hear it when you speak that you're really passionate about that process.
I think it's very imperative that we do get some clarity. And that's probably the only way to do it is through our language and through our words. And unfortunately, the English language is just horrid for that sort of thing. So it's one of the worst languages for precision. German is a whole lot better for precision.
Yes, and they show that in all sorts of ways, making cars and okay. I'm gonna get this caller on. Hello, okay. Hello. Can't hear anyone there. Hi. Oh, I'm not getting anything. Okay, I'll leave the line open if you're there and you can get through. You can say hi when you get through. Anyway, well, okay, so we'll keep talking then. Now, what was I going to ask you? I was just really interested. To me, what I've heard is that biology is the most, the least quantum of sciences, the branch of science that has learnt the least or taken up the least of these sort of new ideas that are really burning like a wildfire, if I can use that fairly current sort of phrase, going through through a lot of the other disciplines.
Well,
which makes sense in a way.
Well, one of the reasons is they have a model, and this is where we need to be careful about our models, because even on the new sciences, we've got models that are limiting because of the wording of it. And so biology has a model that there has to be electricity, you know, some kind of electrical type of communication going on. Then there has to be a chemical transaction. And everything that happens biologically, not only in our bodies, but for plants, for anything, it has to go through that model. And what we're finding out now through the quantum sciences, because quantum physics really does underlie all of the sciences now, all the physical sciences, all of them.
Yep.
And what they're finding is that that can be applied to some of these mysteries of what they never have been able to explain in biology. And that's why we're going to have these huge breakthroughs, is when that really does take effect and application. And
so,
to get rid of that old model.
What I really want to do is go back to this idea that where you were saying that once that happens, we're going to have a shift through to vibrational medicine or vibrational healing. So explain, how do you see that happening?
Did you watch Star Trek? Do you see the little tricorder that they had on there?
Okay.
Well, it's a device that you point it at something, and without touching the thing, it tells you the composition of it. And what it's doing, we think, of course, I mean, you know, this is a TV show, so you can't get too scientific about it, but basically the basic paradigm of it is reading the energy structures of things. It's seeing how light and matter interact, and that's what quantum physics is all about. Well, quantum mechanics specifically is all about is how light and matter interact. Okay, so that's what this whole thing does. We're actually only one novel idea away from having it. All the technology is already here. It's kind of like the laser. All of physics was just flabbergasted how easy it was to build a laser, because actually all of the technology was here. We just needed one novel idea, and Einstein provided that. Once we had that idea, boom. You know, we just innovated all of the technology that we have here, and boom, we had lasers, masers, all kinds of stuff. So the tricorder idea, we're actually just one novel idea away from it, and someone at the level of Einstein is going to come through with something that's just an idea that's just totally revolutionary. Is all these different things are going to come from that when they get down to applied science, when they take the theory and apply it to something else. So,
and this is the process of evolution, isn't it? We take one step after another, and it sort of seems like it's all quite disconnected, and we can't really see. And then there's one thing that happens, and it all comes together.
I don't know. I kind of see it like okay. I guess this is my analogy of it. So if you have a die, you know, like one dice, okay, a die.
Yep.
It has six little numbers on it. If you give that out to the mass public, they're going to start preferring. No. Did I lose you?
Yeah, just for a sec, you're back now.
Oh, did you're I get you back? Okay.
We're going to start.
Right.
They're going to start preferring.
Okay.
So we've got the die.
Okay, so we got the die. And if you put that out to the masses, people are going to start preferring numbers. Let's say they prefer the number 3. Everybody's got to have a die with a number 3 on it. So they make one that's all the sides are 3s. Okay. After a while, everybody gets bored with that. So they go back to the original, start playing with it. Let's say now everybody starts liking the number 4. So all of a sudden, dice start showing up all over the place that just have number 4s on it. And so people are playing with these things, and what they find is when they combine them, it comes up with this magical number, 7. That's beyond anything that's physically on the die. There's no number 7 on the die. It's a mystical thing. Okay?
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, wow. And then they add the die back that had all 6 numbers, and all of a sudden, all these combinations break free. Boom. You just have all kinds of combinations. And so they start increasing the die and say, well, let's not just have 6 faces, let's have a bunch. And you just start the process. Now, yeah, okay, that sounds like an analogy, but that's exactly how the periodic table came to be. Once somebody figured out the layout, all of a sudden the things that were missing showed up and they knew exactly what they were looking for. And we had all these breakthroughs in finding new elements because people knew exactly what was missing because of the arrangement of the table. So
That's how they find stars. They know that there's something missing because of the movement of things around it. They know that there's an influencing factor in there, and so they start training their telescopes on that particular area. People all around the globe start training their telescopes on that area until someone finally spots it.
That's exactly it. So that's how you see what's going on. And you know, as people, like the masses, maybe not the people who are applying it and working with it, but in the masses, they still stick with things like that number 7, even though we may have a die now that has, you know, 60,000 numbers on it. We're making all those combinations. And we still hold some things as mystical because that was the first one. That was that first aha moment. And we tend to
I read somewhere it takes 50 years for a scientific breakthrough to work its way through to the mass consciousness, which makes perfect sense to me because I know when I talk to a lot of, you know, what you might call normal people, they're not even really tuned into the idea of like Einstein stuff. They're still back in the Newtonian, that linear, very much in the linear fixed structure world, and that just amazes me.
Oh, it does me too because, you know, Einstein, that was 100 years ago. That was 1905 when he had his miracle year of all these breakthroughs. And still, 100 years later, we're still talking in Newtonian terms with some stuff. And it's like, you know, he laid all that stuff to waste. Not all of it.
Yeah.
Okay, what he did, he did not replace Newton. Newton's, what we are finding is, and we're going to find again with the next person who's probably already on the face of the earth, that's going to give us these breakthroughs is...
Hi.
We have a caller now. Okay, what Newton found was...
No. I'm just saying hi to this person who's going to give us all the breakthroughs.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, hi. Okay. So okay, I'm with you now. Okay. So,
hello.
Because they may be listening for all we know. That's right, yeah. So what Newton did was show us that certain things are true over a limited range. What Einstein did was increase the range. He said, okay, if an arrow is going this fast, you know, that's one speed. But what if you have, and somebody's standing there watching it, they're both moving at relatively the same speed. But what if you shoot that arrow out into space and go near the speed of light? Well, suddenly the observer and the thing moving are no longer near the same speed, so that changes everything. So and what they found with what Einstein found was, yes, and this only works over a limited range as well. So the next person is going to take it to the next extreme and show us something else about, you know, maybe a bigger range of circumstances that we haven't thought of yet.
For me, my experience of the shifts that are happening for me is that I have more and more control over what was once considered to be completely external to me, you know, external circumstances. I find that now I can actually, just for instance, with the law of attraction material, that I can say, oh, I ask a question to myself, I would really like to know about this, and the next thing I know, someone's tweeted a link to an article that gives me exactly that answer. And that's not, I don't perceive that as a random event, and it certainly doesn't happen in the way of a random event, because that's a tool that I use now to actually get the information I need.
And also on a
physical level for me now, I actually work with my physical body, and presumably also with my DNA, although from a scientific point of view I can't show any proof of that, but I work very much on a physical level. I actually shift I've done a heap of work in terms of my brain structure, in terms of the way my biochemical structure works in my body, how my different mental, emotional and spiritual bodies impact on that, repair work around that. I was just reading some stuff this morning about the, I can't remember the name of it, part of the brain that was just exactly what I was looking for, because this is the part of the brain that I want to start working on next. And I can actually feel it in my head as I'm speaking. But also communication with other dimensions and feeling the shift where those dimensions are actually integrating, so that there is no difference between them. This is one of the really big things for me, to actually feel the integration of different, what I perceive as different dimensions of existence, how I perceive them as what you call an intuitive. So that I become my angelic self. I don't feel that there are angels out there. I am the angelic realm. I am, you know, all of these things. So, but I think that the two things that for me, from my perspective of what is happening, is that I am increasingly powerful in the sense that I have conscious control over so many things that would in the Newtonian world be considered to be external to me, and two, that I am increasingly integrated through more and more and more levels of existence that in the Newtonian level, Newtonian worldview do not exist.
Yeah, definitely. Einstein really is the one who impacted that the most, as far as knowing that depending on where the observers are to any event, if one observer says, well, it happened in this order, A and B and C, and then another observer said, no, it happened C, A, B, that both of them are right. Because that both of them are right, and nobody has a privileged place for saying the order of things that should be. So he really is the one who opened up that idea for us to be able to think about cause and effect, and people who can think about time in a very different kind of way. And that's something that's always plagued science, is that time arrow, because in mathematics, math could care less which way the arrow's going. Math. And so when you're dealing with theoretical physics, you're dealing with mathematics purely. And that time arrow makes no difference whatsoever. And quantum physicists have had to deal with, they hit that wall immediately. With them, why do things seem like in the physical realm to only go one direction? It's because in the physical realm it does. So they've come up with theories and ideas about why the time arrow goes one way in the physical. But what we have to remember about ourselves, what people tend to forget, is we are mind, body, spirit. And so mind and spirit don't know anything about that linear time frame. Body does. That's a body element, something we deal with there. So we're multidimensional living, just sitting here, no matter what we believe about cause and effect and what we believe about the time arrow, we're sitting here doing it because we can think about something in the past while we're driving down the road in the future, into our future.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, I don't know how anybody can't say that we're not multidimensional living at all times, regardless of our beliefs, because we can be in like three different places at once as far as time is concerned and say, thinking about the past, that's not actually being in the past. Well, if you think about the future, it's not actually being the future, and it's all about living now and the choices you make and that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's where it gets into belief system. So,
yeah, sure.
But the synchronicity thing, my neighbor gets tickled all the time because just all these things happen synchronistically for me. And she said, that's always happening to you. I said, that's what's normal. Living out of touch and out of the flow and uninformed is what's weird.
Yeah. Hey, listen, tell me, I want to ask you, because now my perception of what's going on for me at the moment is that as that integration process is going on for me, where, that I was talking about with all those different aspects and time as well, it's what I'm working with now is integrating those into my physical body so that my physical body, and I'm not even sure because I'm still at the very first sort of stage of this process, but my physical body is going to be completely integrated with these more, what I call multidimensional aspects, who operate outside of linear time. So what I'm wondering is what you see as the process of when, because I think it's a when, and I'm interested in your opinion, when the body steps outside of linear time. Is that a possibility?
Well, according to, and not to just always go back to the science with it, you know, because everybody has a different experience with that sort of thing, but the science says that, yes, mathematically, that's possible. It's perfectly possible for it to happen. So as far as us doing it, what the math says is you may have to wait till eternity for it to happen, but yes, it could. Whether
but that's
people
now.
Are going to, in mass, right, in mass start doing this, I don't know, M. H. Atwater wrote a really good book called Future Memory. And you have to understand all books like this are a snapshot in time. So some of the science that she was referencing has actually been replaced with other theories now. So, you know, keep that in mind if you read it. But one of the things she talked about in there with the future memory is that literally it's sort of like time warp bubbles that we can live in. And I have experienced those. So I was thrilled to find that in a book that somebody else had written about that, where the passage of time is not the same for me as it is for the world around me. And that I move faster through time than what the clock says. And so I've experienced that enough for myself. It's not something that I tried to do, but I've experienced it enough for myself. And some people still look at me like I'm from Mars when I say that, and I just tell them, no, Venus. It happens. I don't know what to tell you. It's happening. I've had it outside verified. You know, I've been at somewhere else where there were other people and had it verified. So it's not just my own misunderstandings of time in my brain. It's not me misreading the clock. It's been verified by outsiders who knew nothing of it and were shocked. Of course, I didn't explain it to them either. So
in what form was the verification?
Well, I was doing a job that takes a certain amount of time. And I've been in the job for them for 6 years. And they know exactly how long it takes. And they walked off, came back, and it had taken only a third of the time to do. And they were like, that can't be. And they actually checked the work to make sure that it was all done. Because, you know, of course, they don't want to get shortchanged on the work. And it was all there. So, you know,
I had a funny
45 minutes was 15 minutes. So there you go.
I had a funny experience with that when I was in my early 20s, where I went out. The most alcohol I think I've ever consumed, got absolutely blind drunk. I was out really, really late. I only got 3 hours sleep. Got up, still drunk, went to work. It's the only time I've actually done this, but I was actually in a really happy state. Went to work. And I had a very technical accounting type job. And I had a process that I had to go through of balancing the books for this company that I had to go through every morning. And it took me till lunchtime, and I finished it in like half an hour that day. And
it was moving. You didn't feel like you were moving any faster, right?
No, I didn't have any sense of time at all. And I think the hilarious thing, just in terms of what we're talking about, is that I was still drunk. I'd obviously lifted myself out of any sort of linear time restriction. It had to be checked. It was always checked because it was so important to get it right. So my supervisor always checked it, and it was fine. But I was really nervous about telling them I'd done it when I realized what the time was.
Right, and I had no way to hide it because the customer walked up and I was like, I'm done, and they're like, no way. So I didn't explain it to them, and I wasn't in a rush. I never felt. I was surprised too. When I checked the clock, I was shocked.
Yeah.
Because there was just no
I remember being shocked too. I remember being shocked in that experience as well. Yeah. And that's why it stayed in my mind so strongly. Hey, now, just how do you see this if our bodies do step out of linear time, just like completely, how do you see that playing out? How would our lives be different? Can you imagine what that would be like?
You know, what I see is we depend on time so much all the way around the world for different things happening. And it's probably going to be a phase of, if more people start doing this, and especially if more people start doing it at will. I haven't figured that out yet, because there are a lot of times where I would like to be able to get a whole lot done in 5 minutes. You know, if I could figure out how to do that at will, that would be a bonus. But I haven't figured, and I haven't been really trying to do it either.
Yeah,
I think that's something I'm figuring out, because sometimes people get caught in the novelty of experiences, and they just want to keep having those over and over and over. And for me, having it the few times that I did was enough to be able to talk to you about it, to talk to your listeners about it and say it's happening. If I never have it again, it was worthwhile. So I don't want to get trapped in that kind of thing or in that kind of mindset about the novelty of stuff. But if people start doing it, I think we're going to have a breakdown of cooperation about time, because we depend on it. Our whole world is based around the clock. And so I think it would be very upsetting to a lot of cooperative type things that have to happen at different times because of that at first, until everybody was doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and
I had a discussion with someone on Twitter about this, and they were saying you have to manipulate ourselves in order to come together and create communities. And I took immense offence at this statement, and was very polite about it and said, this seems like rubbish to me. And they said, but of course, if you're going to have lunch with someone, you have to manipulate that person to have lunch with you, you know, to say, this is the time and this is when we need to be there, and it's a process of manipulation. Now, for me, because I actually don't have a structure where I have to do, there's virtually nothing that I have to do at any particular time other than my radio shows. That's it. That's the only thing that I have a time on. And what I do is I just go with whatever I want to do, and I connect with whoever happens to be in that space when I'm doing it. If someone rings, you know, I don't answer the phone if I don't feel like talking, or if I do, I pick the phone up. So there's this incredible flow, and the more that the people who are incredibly synchronous with that flow with me are the people who are living in the same way. So I think, I need to say something to this person, and the phone rings and it's them. And so I have, and particularly Tana, who I talk with every day, and she and I are in a very synchronous flow because we both live almost like a very high percentage of our being is in that flow of just, you know, being in our own inner timing in a sense, rather than relying on any external sort of timing.
I do both. I live in both worlds. So that's very, but you know, I do have to agree with him. I wouldn't agree with the word manipulate, but I will say this, to have a structured society, you do have to have a level of conformity and cooperation. Otherwise, you've just got mass chaos of everybody just going doing whatever. I mean, look at traffic. If everybody didn't obey the traffic rules, you know, and stop at a stop sign, what would happen? So you do have to have that to have civil societies at some level.
I disagree, because what I see, the process, and this is part of the time thing, what I see the process happening is that everything is perfectly ordered, but in a different kind of structure that comes from internally, and perhaps coming back to that crystal thing. This is why I'm wondering about when we actually have you talk about coherence, and I'm sure I'm using the word wrong, but for me, when we have a coherence and we don't have this things that are communicating with like maybe all our antennas heading off in different directions, picking up all mixed signals. But when we're actually in that space where we're in tune and in alignment, then we can operate from an internal space that is exactly always where it needs to be. Where, you know, we drive around.
Well,
it's interesting.
Let me say something to that before you go any further.
Yes,
because
right.
there was one experiment that's working perfectly, that shows exactly what you're talking about. And it's in Europe, and I wish I could remember where that it is, but it's in a major city. And they had an extreme intersection, you know, that was just busy, busy, busy intersection. And what they did, they took down all of the traffic signals, took them all down. And so what they have now is people actually paying attention, not to an external authority, but internally looking around, seeing what's happening, and they actually have fewer wrecks, fewer incidents, because in this country they have a lot of people on bicycles as well as cars, and they have a lot of pedestrian traffic, and they actually have a lot more cooperation and fewer incidences because people have internalized, I need to pay attention here, and I need to cooperate and participate with the whole while I'm in this place. So, and it works, and they're looking at taking away all the traffic signals everywhere in that
makes perfect sense.
Or the major intersection. And they showed the before and after pictures of it too, and the clutter is gone, all of that outside authority type stuff. It's all, and it's just a much more peaceful intersection. The whole vibe came down to a cooperative, peaceful, work together kind of thing. It's beautiful.
Where I live out in the country. It's a very alternative area. It's like Woodstock. A lot of people came here in the 70s and settled. Our small village is like the hub for it, but it's actually probably about 200 kilometers in diameter, or, you know, it's quite a big area. Got a few bigger towns, few smaller villages. We have virtually no traffic lights in this area. We have no street signs. It's very, just no, hardly even any sort of police involvement, traffic involvement, none of that. I get, and we have a really peaceful, happy society. When I go outside of what some people call our little bubble here, I go out into the mainstream, onto the traffic, onto the main roads there, and I'm bombarded with rules about how I have to drive. I have to watch. Am I doing 70 kilometres an hour, or is this an 80 kilometre zone? Maybe a 90. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be doing. Is there a police car around this corner with a radar? Can I turn left from here? My ability to drive safely, I notice it drops dramatically from what it does in this area, which, you know, still has just as much traffic as these other country areas. But a completely different experience. So, in a way, I've almost lived that experiment. And for myself, I find it violent and really disruptive, and it certainly has a very negative effect on my ability to drive.
Absolutely.
Exactly the experiment. It's very exciting. Hey, listen, we've only got 2 minutes to go.
Wow. Passes fast when you're having fun.
I know. We're just in a time warp bubble there.
There you go.
But tell us, what do you want to tell me? Tell me anything.
Tell me
about your site, tell me about your book, anything.
Well, what I would do is encourage people not to be intimidated by things like quantum physics, by things like intuitive practices as being woo-woo. And that kind of, don't be intimidated. Dig in. See what you can find. See what vibes with you. The thing about the Sage Age, unlike most other books, and every book has its place and its purpose, but a lot of books will tell you what to think. They will draw you to a certain conclusion. The Sage Age does not do that. It gives you 2 + 2 equals, and you got to fill it in with what's most meaningful to you. It requires work. Don't be spoon-fed the information. Dig through it yourself. Come to your own conclusions and see what vibes with you, and don't be intimidated by it. But we need clarity.
It's good advice. I'm one of these people who use quantum all the time without knowing what it means. And I know that I live in a quantum universe. I know also, and I live a quantum life, but I also know that I know very little about the actual science, and I've always felt that as a lack, that not a lack in myself, but a lack in my life, something that I long for. So I'm really looking forward to having a book.
The book has no jargon in it that you can't understand. I mean, the whole point is that you don't have to already understand it to get the book. The book is the thing that educates you, and it gives you layman's terms. It gets rid of the jargon, and it makes sure that you understand one thing before you go to the next, and builds up your understandings.
Yeah, that would be good. Because I must say, I do read stuff, and I go, yeah, I know. Intuitively, I can feel that. I know that I understand it, but I could never get it enough to explain it or to repeat it or to be able to say, this is what I'm doing and this is how it relates to the science. And that's really what I want to do. I want to be able to do that for myself.
That's why I wrote the book. I wrote it for myself. Yes. For that very thing. I didn't even think about publishing it until I was 3 years into the research.
Well, good on you for doing it. And it's sageage.net. You can get a copy of Mayanna's book. And thank you so much. It's been so much fun.
Oh, yeah, I've enjoyed it.